I got strawberries today.
And they were good.
I know.
Maybe Kay.
Smith had awesome strawberries.
They were so pretty. We should have taken a picture.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Yes. I have to get those more often. I just kind of discovered them today, so.
You discovered strawberries?
Well, okay. No, they're pre-cut strawberries. So, like, it's like a cup. It's, you know, about that tall. And it's just a cup of slice. Everything's sliced off and everything. So, it's like eating candy. Strawberries. It's like, oh, there's strawberries.
Yeah, they're so good.
Nice.
Yeah, we totally have, like, 5 minutes left.
Let's do it.
All right.
So strawberries are good.
We haven't done anything really funny, though. We always have some funny thing that we start with.
That's because I didn't bring my hamster this time. I'm sorry.
That's what we're missing.
Hugging her hamster.
I'm not hugging my hamster.
Yeah, and Christian's eating, like, the most delicious quesadilla.
Oh, my goodness.
I have ever seen. Yeah.
That's okay.
It's pretty good.
Why don't I get this thing started before you guys have to leave?
Fine. All right. Welcome to Confessions of a Game Dev podcast. Today we have, just for a little bit...
10 minutes. Well, that's
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Good heavens, you babies. Ashley McMillan.
Sorry, you guys are lazy and don't have class.
Oh. I don't have anything to say to that.
I will debate the laziness.
Yeah,
there's Ashley's intro, and Christian Munoz is with us today.
Munoz.
Munoz. Oh, excuse me.
Munoz.
Pardone.
Pardone
me.
Oh, your Spanish is really bad. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
Con permiso.
That means excuse me, like
physically?
Like you're trying to get through somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get through this intro is what I'm trying to do, so con permiso. This is Spencer Buchanan, and we also have today Brandon Karate.
Woohoo!
Yay! You do a lot of woohoos. I was listening to some of them.
I do.
And
I get excited when we start recording.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure it's a bad thing. It's just
Spencer
it's just
is not excited when we start recording.
I'm like shot. I feel like I didn't do much today, but I did. I don't know, but
which is sad because it's your birthday.
Today is my birthday.
Today is Spencer's birthday. You guys.
He's old now.
Woo-hoo.
Dude, I was old yesterday.
You're older like, today though.
Yeah. What?
I'm excited.
What?
Nothing. I did a woohoo again.
Yeah, I know.
Woohoo.
Your woohoo's way better than karate.
This is true. She practices hers more.
Yeah.
I improvise my woohoos.
Yeah. Moving on before this goes down south in the first 5 minutes. So we had some fun stuff today. We're going to talk about, what do we got? So the EAE Masters program just pitched all their thesis games to the industry professionals in Salt Lake. And so Cohort 3 is what they're called, the third year graduate students, they all pitched 4 really interesting games, really cool topics. We'll talk about those. We'll talk about, Karate, you had some things that you wanted to talk about.
Well, we'll go over that in a second, but before these guys run out of time,
right.
We got it. Christian,
we
wanted to talk about
minutes.
Metal Gear Solid Rising.
Yeah, yes. Go for it.
It's amazing. If you don't have it, buy it. It is like the coolest thing ever. You can slice up things into a million pieces.
This game brought to you by Metal Gear Rising Solid.
Yes.
For this podcast.
What's different in it, the new one?
Well, you're no longer playing as Snake. Mm-hmm. You're playing as Raiden. I don't know how to pronounce his name. So he's like a cyborg ninja. It is amazing. The best thing about it is that you can slow down time and then cut people open, extract their organs,
what?
Crush them in your fist, and heal yourself.
The uber violent game.
Yeah, speaking of violent games, wow.
I didn't know, I knew
you could like slice people up and it was like super dynamic on
yeah, I don't even know how they do all that. Like seriously, like there's been things I've been able to cut up into like 300 pieces because it tells you right there how many pieces you cut.
That's like a
things.
Part of the scoring system.
Yeah,
instead of a combo, it's you cut it up into 300 pieces.
Wow. Yeah, and it tells you like how many kills you did per slice or something like that. And
oh my heavens!
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Well, I remember a demo that Kojima did this was like a couple of years ago when they first started the game, but they were showing how he was cutting a watermelon.
Yes!
And he was just like, cut it in half, and then he cut that in half, and he cut that into slices. It was very precise.
Yeah.
And it was really impressive, like, how precise the cutting mechanic was.
And this is all just done with the analog sticks, right?
Yeah. Like, you can, like, change the angle at which you're cutting, and you can cut sideways, up and down.
Does it feel seamless when you go in and out of that cutting mode? Because I'm just trying to comprehend physically on the controller what you're doing to... Like, you approach a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what?
Well, it depends on the strength of the enemy, right? Like the weaker soldiers, okay. You can literally just walk up to them, hit them like twice, and then I have the PlayStation 3 version.
Okay.
So like you hit L1. Okay. And then that goes into like the slow motion thing, and then that's when you can start like cutting them into little pieces.
So okay, so you hit L1, it goes slow mo. Now if I, what am I using?
Your analog sticks.
Both of them?
Yeah, because you can use what's called free sword mode, which is where your analog sticks is when you start like going like up and down and like and it cuts in whichever way you're.
Okay, so
doing.
If I move both of them up, what does that do?
I don't do it with the analog sticks. So I don't have much practice. So the way I usually do it is I adjust the angle. And then with the X with a square or a triangle is the way that I start cutting.
Okay, so if I push up and then I push X.
Yeah, like it'll adjust like the angle at which you're cutting.
Okay.
So like you can either have like you know, like cut diagonally or cut up and down or, you know, it adjusts the angle at which you're going to start cutting.
Okay.
And then you hit either square or triangle and that's when he starts actually slicing.
So if I want to do one slice, I push up. Push X, and then if I push left
square.
And X, square.
Okay.
Push left and square, then so
it changes the angle. And then
the
X is not a part of the slicing. It's either square or triangle.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
So I push a button and I push a direction, and it slices once, and it waits for me until I.
Yeah, or you can just keep smashing in that same direction, and it'll just keep slashing like in that.
But is it like super sensitive? So if I even if I'm just wandering a little bit up or down, it'll start slicing at different angles.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And so it's part of like the main mechanic of the game, because I mean, like I was saying earlier, like the whole thing of crushing their organs is not just for like visuals, you know.
Yeah.
Like the thing is that according to the story, like he has no like self regenerating thing like the other cyborgs do.
Uh-huh.
So the thing that he has to do is he has to cut into them, take out the regeneration packs, and then when he crushes them, he absorbs them. Mm-hmm. And then that's how he heals himself.
It's not like you're ripping somebody's heart out. It's like it was like a string of
It's like packs. But it looks like an organ.
It looks like a spinal cord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ripped apart.
Of
yeah.
course.
Yeah.
It's not going to look cool that way.
It's 6 o'clock.
Shit.
It's 6
okay.
o'clock.
Either way, buy it.
All right. Thanks, Christian. See you. Ashley, thanks for making fun of me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
See you later.
Happy birthday.
All
right. See you guys.
You know, you can change seats now if you want.
I'm totally changing seats.
We can totally, like, put our feet up.
Oh, man.
We always have too many people in here that we don't get time to put our feet up. This is great.
I think we'll talk about Lara Croft next week.
Fine.
Well, I want to see what... Like, I want to play the game.
Oh, yeah.
Lara Croft is coming out next week. Which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for it. I just watched a really cool Conan video.
Oh, my gosh. We need a link to that.
Really, I think I'll, you know, let me write a note down. I'll link to that one because it was a really funny video.
Should we mention the website?
We should.
Or are we going to do that later?
Well, we can mention it now. Guys, if you're listening to this now, if you're just following us on iTunes and stuff, go to gamedevconfess.com.
Booyah!
We have a new website.
I can't woohoo. I can only...
It's not quite done yet. There's still a couple pages that need to be filled out, some of the profiles and things. But you can access every one of our podcasts. You can download all of them, listen to them right there on the site. There's a feed you can follow if you'd like.
Yeah. And most people don't realize this, but I was just hosting it off of my personal website. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to brand it not just under me. We wanted to make sure that it's cohesive and concise for everyone to feel part of, because it's definitely not just mine. And so we got... Yeah, I bought the website. But that's I bought it for us. And
I offered to help.
Yes. And so he...
I just made it.
He just made it. I was just like, here you go. Here's your login password. He's like, woohoo! I can woohoo if I'm intimidating you.
Yeah.
Imitating you.
Yeah.
It's just natural. It's not
a karate woohoo.
It's a karate woohoo. And he totally woohooed for like 2 days on that website. And it's already pretty bomber. So...
please take a look at it. Leave comments on our stuff. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we appreciate, and it's It's exciting. It's I think I was talking to someone and I was like, they're like, well, you just need to understand that people are listening to your podcast. I'm like, we just made our podcast so that we could talk. And they're like, well, apparently. I was like, ouch. But a couple weeks ago, when we did our podcast critiquing or discussing the games for the undergrads, one of the professors told me that a lot of the undergrads listened to it and come to find out we made someone cry. And
so we don't know who that is. We don't want to know who that is, but we apologize. We're sorry about that.
Well, and I could get into opinions and probably make more people cry about that, but that's my fine artist coming out of me. So we'll skip and move on to... the other games.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about Cohort 3's games that are coming out.
Yeah.
Or that are coming out. They just barely pitched to the industry panel. For those who don't know, here at the Entertainment Arts and Engineering program, in the master's program every year, we make thesis games, which become the final project that we're going to work on for about a year, a little over a year. And you have a group of about 8-ish team members, and you build your games. Well, this year what they did was kind of a Survivor-esque, vote 'em off the island kind of method of choosing which games. They had whoever wanted to pitch, pitched. They pitched, I think, like a month ago. Well,
okay, so interestingly, they all had to be part of a team that pitched.
Okay.
So if you didn't want to pitch, you still had to be... helping someone else pitch their game, whether it's helping them make slides, helping them figuring out the design,
do or something.
They pitch. You have to do something, which is kind of neat.
So they did that, which I think was good. Mm-hmm. And after the pitches were made, they basically formed the four teams that are currently vying for final approval.
Right.
The games had to, and according to Bob Kessler, he said that the games had to answer a question.
Right.
And that was a big deal. And the industry panel was there to, I wonder what
they were there for.
I don't mean that badly, but. No, but the industry panel is interesting. I was love listening to that. And so we went down and listened to the professional pitches. We heard them all do practice pitches earlier.
Oh, right.
But it's very different to hear them in front of the industry professionals because they get a little nervous. Everyone gets nervous, you know. You're meeting these people who do this for a living, and you get intimidated a little bit. One of the more interesting things, I thought, was that industry professionals generally don't consider student work to be... students to be able to do a certain amount of work.
Yeah.
They have a very specific expectation of what students are able to do in a given period of time.
And they usually underestimate.
Yes, which I think is good and bad, because it motivates students to push themselves a little farther, but at the same time, it also... gives a realistic, you know what, you know, you couldn't do this in the amount of time that you think you have.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not possible.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a really good wake-up call for students anyway. But anyway, I thought we'd talk about the four games and...
Yeah, and I actually wanted to contrast, I like that you contrasted the difference, because last year... Anyone could submit a one sheet, and we all submitted one sheets of whatever our game design was. I think though it wasn't a requirement whatsoever, you're graded whatsoever. There was about 20 pitches or 20 one sheets, 17 maybe, which is significant because that's more than half of the people in our group. And they narrowed it down to 7. They told us what teams we'd be on. They told us what prototypes we'd be working on, and we had to make a prototype for a month. And then we created those and then pitched them to the industry professionals.
Yes.
And then from there, they decided 3, put us on teams of 8 or 9 or 10, and then we've been going at those games. So this time, someone called it Hunger Games. One of the professors was like, oh, it's Hunger Games style. I think it's more survival-esque. But yeah, it was just like what everyone pitches, and then they had 3 days to decide which game they want to be on. And it was really interesting because I poked my head in there a couple times, and on a whiteboard they had all the games that were initially pitched, and there were some scratched out, there were some that were rewritten in, because you're like, oh, this is going to be such a great game, and 2 people show up, they're like, oh, we can do this, and I'm like, yeah, but we don't have enough people to do it. Okay, screw it. I'm not on this team anymore. And people were jumping like every hour, and it was just like everyone was fighting for more people on their team, and it turned into 4 final. Well, and I just thought, that's not cool, because you're going to hurt someone's feelings or you're going to cause some problems. But what it ended up doing was everyone was hardcore. They said, I am on this team, and I know it, and I want to be on here. And everyone worked freaking amazingly hard. And
I think that's the biggest thing,
amazing prototypes compared to what we did last year.
Well, because the problem that we had, and this is my own opinion, but the mm-hmm. problem that I had with mine is that I wasn't fully invested in the prototype that it was assigned to.
Yeah, I wasn't.
And the hard part, it's not a matter of just the prototype. It was a matter of, you know, looking at the idea, looking at the design, realizing that the person who came up with the one sheet did it only because they were required to and didn't want to.
Yeah.
It didn't, like, he, you know, the person who did it didn't want to design it. The person, we had one engineer, and we had me, who I'm like, well, I don't think this is going to go through, so just tell me what I'm going to be doing later.
Yeah.
You know, what am I actually going to be working on? And, like, we gave it a good run anyway. But the problem is just, there wasn't a lot of investment. And I think the way that they're doing it this year is stronger because, just like you said, I think because you are invested. You're like, you know, this is the game that I chose. Right. Oh, I'm really excited to be here. I wasn't forced on this team. Nobody said, you have to be on this team. It's just, I want to be here. I want to make this the best thing ever. And it really showed in those presentations mm-hmm. because, you know, these people, you know, these are people who are coming up and they're very invested. They're very talented and they're very, like, there's some impressive work. And that's what, let's talk about it.
So, the first one of the night was co-signers. Zach Truscott, mm-hmm. Truscott, and Andrew Witz, who was on here before. And
they were the two presenters.
Yeah, and I want to get Andrew on, or Zach on here, and just in general, but those two guys, I was absolutely floored. They when they told me this a month ago, they pitched an asymmetrical co-op game, and I'm like, are you talking about networking? And this is like 3 days in. I'm like, you're talking about networking. They're like, yep. And I said, out of scope. No way. He's like, we've already got it done. Like,
so it's already working.
And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And within 3 days, two of their engineers figured out how to network computers, and they, within a week and a half, they had a buddy in Boston testing this. So it wasn't just closed network. Mm-hmm. They could have done it on any internet connection whatsoever, have two people playing this game. And I just thought, you've got to be freaking kidding me.
So let's talk about the game is. The game essentially is one player plays a thief, another player plays a hacker.
Right.
And both have the same goal of breaking into the Department of Education and wiping out their student loans.
Yes.
And both have different skill sets. The thief plays from a first-person perspective, where he basically runs and hides and whatever.
Similar to Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear Solid was
their comparison.
I'll be honest, it's more just, okay, when they explained this, it was Deus Ex mixed with Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
But to be honest, having played Deus Ex Human Revolution. It's basically Deus Ex mixed with just Deus Ex and no Metal Gear.
You know what? It kind of is. Because it wasn't Deus Ex. It was Deus Ex, the hacking game.
Yes.
The hacking minigame mm-hmm. when you wanted to open a door.
It's Deus Ex, the hacking minigame with Deus Ex, the sneaking game. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no Metal Gear at all in here.
Which is funny. Those are the two parts of Deus Ex that I didn't like. Because I'm not that style. And I was like, whatever, I'm going in. Why do I only have a tranquilizer? This sucks. And I get blown away.
But I know that Andrew likes Metal Gear, and that's why he wanted to put it up there. But the fact is, there's a lot less Metal Gear, a lot more Deus Ex in here.
Yeah. And
so that's just what
I see that.
Anyway. But you have these two things, and it's really interesting to play. I love the idea of it. It actually plays rather well.
It does.
The problem I saw was that, well, it is buggy, but it's very alpha. It's not even alpha.
I mean,
it's pre-alpha.
It was white box. It's a good old white box.
It locked up so many times we were playing, but when it did work, it felt a little, I could never see what I wanted to see as a hacker.
Oh, okay.
And as the player, the communications back and forth. I love that they did that little demo where they were like, are you over here? Are you over this? We're doing this. But it was so scripted, and it felt scripted. And the only time it became interesting, I'd already seen him, and I'd already played it, and I already saw it.
Yeah.
But it felt scripted to me at the way that they were talking.
Uh-huh.
Coming from a film background, you know when something feels not real.
Yeah.
You know, and it just doesn't quite sound right. But anyway, so they were talking. And when it started to break down, that's when you saw the genuine gameplay
appear.
Right.
When things started not working and not following the script that they'd created for themselves,
yeah,
it was brilliant. It was really fun to listen to.
It was about that time where they're like, okay, the guy passed, and he gets up off the desk. He's like, no, he didn't pass. He's right here.
Yeah.
And that was funny. And what, so you explained the hacker, the point man, they call them, or the thief, mm-hmm. that is just first person Deus Ex. But the hacker, he has a top-down version of an abstracted overlay of the map, and he sees security nodes. And the security system like revolves around all these nodes. And if you're if you've locked a node with your control while the security node comes around, then you're caught the same mm-hmm. way the thief would get caught.
And you can also you take control of cameras, and that's how you
right.
see
you can control thing. Cameras. There was I noticed that there was a lot of hesitation from the industry, from people that were what I guess would call AAA mindset, mm-hmm. that they were like, no way, either out of scope, ridiculous, not fun. If it doesn't have a single player mode, this is a completely useless game.
Right.
But then those that could recognize it for an indie game were like, oh my gosh, this is such a cool experience. Do not dare put a single player experience mm-hmm. in it. It's got to be a two player. They call it the couch co-op. Yep. Was one of the terms that the
one I guess the hacker plays on an iPad and they
yeah I mean, well I mean right now it was set on two computers, but they have dreams of one, the hacker on an iPad where he's touch interface, and the other is either WASD controls or a video game controller,
right.
I loved that. It definitely has a lot of potential because asymmetrical play. And we talked about this a couple days ago, actually right after the presentation, mm-hmm. the karate, and I got into it, and he's like, well, Borderlands is asymmetrical play, and
right.
Call of Duty is asymmetrical. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Okay, I'm a medic versus an assault, or I'm this class versus that class, but I'm talking like completely different skill sets, so much so that my interface is completely different.
You brought up Rayman.
Oh, yeah, and the new Rayman U, or for the Wii U, it's a demo only right now, but and this is a perfect example because one character has the Wiimote controls and the other has the tablet. And the tablet guy is a little fairy that walks around Rayman, so the tablet doesn't get to use the main character and platform with him. What he does is he's this little fairy dude that he can control platforms, and so there's a platform that can slide back and forth. So once it's in position, then the second player can now jump on top of it. And oh no, there's some floaty ghosts that are flying by. Touch them and you pop them. And it won't hit Rayman because Rayman has nothing, has no control. So he's got that asymmetrical play, which is completely different from the platformer. That's the second seat. And you know, one of the things that we talked about the Wii U and the tablet, and how it puts people on different levels. And the only way that we've noticed that it seems to be successful is the tablet guy is the dungeon master. He cannot be a direct player, because if he is, it's going to cause problems. And so I think they did. They showed a diagram, and it was rock, paper, scissors, Spock.
Yes.
You know, they
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory. And they showed, here's the hacker, and here's the thief, that they're both on the top, and we've got to make sure that they are equally managed, so that one doesn't go, you know what, this hacker sucks, I hate being the hacker, let me be this. You know, how do you make it sure? And that's their thesis question, I think.
Part of that's balancing. I mean, you get into any balance issue ever, this is an interesting question that hasn't been really approached very often.
Right, and I think this was their thesis question. I don't remember them specifically mentioning one, but this has felt like what their core was really mm-hmm. going to get at. Whether they knew it or not, this is what they're going to be asking down the road.
I was doing some research. I wish I could remember the name. I forgot to write it down. There's a game that came out just a little while ago. Well, it didn't come out, or maybe it did. But I was reading an article about it. Basically, it was one player plays a sniper, the other plays a spy.
Okay.
Okay, and it's a competitive game.
Uh-huh.
And basically, the spy is at a party. Okay, the spy is in this party in a house that has multiple levels.
Okay,
and the sniper is across the courtyard, across in a different building.
Yeah,
and can only see people in the windows.
Hmm.
Okay, and the goal of the spy has very specific goals. I need to talk to this person. I need to pocket this person. I need to do specific things in this house without getting caught and shot by the sniper.
Does the sniper know who the spy is?
He isn't, because he's dressed. They're all dressed in like formal
yeah.
attire,
and the spy has the ability to, like, walk like a...
Assassin's Creed?
To walk like one of the party guests.
Okay.
To sit there and talk like a party guest.
Yeah.
But he has a timer. He has a specific amount of time that he has to finish these objectives, and so he has to run in certain instances.
Okay.
You know, but if he starts running and he goes past a bunch of windows, the sniper's easily going to pick him off.
Yeah.
Okay. But instead, he's like slowly making his way. He understands, and he's able to blend himself in.
Uh-huh.
Then it offers two very different. Because he doesn't have any other... you can't, like, affect the sniper at all.
Yeah.
And the sniper has only one thing, is to see and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they're two different gameplay styles, two different things, two completely opposed balances. And so when the article I read, it was really interesting, because you don't have a lot of those experiences in gaming.
No.
You know, normally you have... Balance means exactly the same.
Well, like, I remember Assassin's Creed 3, the multiplayer... was essentially that, but everyone's the spy,
right?
And there's you can easily walk around without anyone, thinking that you're anything but. But then, to make sure the AI looks a little smart, they have them sprinting every now and then.
Yes.
Like, oh, was that one? I don't know. Dang it! You know, and
we'd have abilities that would send somebody off.
Right. Yeah. Like, and so there was it was interesting, and it sounds interesting to imagine having the Assassin's Creed 3 game. With a sniper up on a stand, and all he can do is just watch.
He's like, I know you're here somewhere.
I can watch. I know you're here, and I'm going to pop you.
So that, but it was so, interesting. I mean, since like there is asymmetrical gameplay, I think there's a lot of ways to look at things. And to comment on that, when the guy, I don't remember which industry professional was talking about multiplayer.
Uh-huh.
There's a few of them.
Yeah.
But when they started mentioning multiplayer, it's like you have to have a single player component. Even in AAA games, you have multiplayer only experiences. Indie games especially, you do. Do you remember the one with the PlayStation Move? Where it was just the PlayStation, you had a bunch of Move controllers screen?
Joust. Johann Sebastian Joust.
And that was...
That would be dumb without a single
Yeah, well, we wouldn't do it. It's multiplayer only, okay? And so that was... But it was an interesting game because it was different, it was unique, it was something weird, and it was indie, and so you get away with that kind of a thing.
Right.
As well, this two-player game. But multiplayer games are still becoming more and more... common multiplayer only. Dust is multiplayer only. Mm-hmm. Any MMO, EVE.
World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft
would be completely
is, yeah.
pointless, and since 2004, it's multiplayer.
I tried playing it single player. This is the worst experience ever. I'm like, this is terrible. And I don't like MMOs in general, but that did not convince me that it suddenly I've been missing out.
I was just like, oh, this is the worst ever.
Now, Second Life.
Second Life was that was the shit. No,
I'm well,
that was shit.
That was shit. I'm excited. I'm really excited. And one thing to mention, they were all presented. The professors got the feedback from the pros, and even if all the pros said this is absolutely the worst idea in the world, can it? The professors can still green light it and basically let them work on it for the next year. And so they have final say, and, you know, they took it all in consideration. I guess they've been debating it for the last 2 days, and tomorrow they'll let them know. I'm kind of excited.
I'm curious to see what they said
all four could get canned, all four could get greenlit, or variation of all. Mm-hmm. And if all four get canned, they would probably say, okay, go back and try it again. Or
we'll see.
You guys have to do something
That's
else.
Interesting. The one thing I wanted to mention, the one difficulty I see with this team, and... It's a difficulty that I see with a lot of the teams.
Okay.
Is the art. There,
there's
a lot of animation. Like, I was talking about this with Roger, that this game should use something like robots as opposed to...
Humans?
As opposed to human beings. Because human beings take a lot of time to animate.
Yeah.
And you're looking at... because they had a progression of characters, they had a progression of enemies, they had a progression of... environments,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at five, you know, if we go with what they wanted five different levels.
Yeah.
So five different levels with five different sets of enemies, five different animation sets, five different types of obstacles, five different levels that need to be created and painted and textured and modeled. That's a lot of work. And the fact is in that entire cohort, there's only really two artists.
Right.
And then the producers have their art.
So some have art now. Yeah.
And so, but even so, like, you're talking five levels, even for a professional development team, takes some time.
Yes.
So for an amateur development team or an experienced one, that's super ambitious. I think you'd have to scale that back.
I did notice that three out of the four, the whole time, I'm just like, way out of scope, but I'm not concerned. Like, you know, I could have said, oh, you guys are out of scope, and some right. people kind of addressed it, and they're like, no, we totally scoped this right. And it's like, you know what, maybe you did, but I'll guarantee you, from what we've gone through, mm-hmm. I'll guarantee you, you'll be happy with one level. Yes. And I hope that they only stick with one level and just make that it good. So sexy. Right?
Well, because that's the goal of an independent game, is to hit that experience one time.
Right.
Because, like, you're not... I guess there's another problem with this game I have, is that in comparing it to Metal Gear Solid, you're automatically comparing yourself to Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
Or Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Or whoever.
Yeah.
You've automatically created an expectation that if you don't meet or exceed, you're not as good, yeah. and you immediately disappoint your projected audience.
Yeah. And I love their narrative, and I guess this mm-hmm. is kind of a concern. I mean, their narrative was, and they did what it wasn't Guerrilla. What's the at PS4, the PlayStation 4, the guys that pitched, and then they ruined it by going, oh, and you're superheroes.
Oh, Sucker Punch.
And then they like, here's all this data and here's all this alarming information, and what would you do if you were a resistance group in that? And it's like, and everyone in the room, and everyone I've talked to since then, like, I was so enwrapped, and then they go, oh, and you're a superhero. And it's like, ah! And so they did that. I mean, they're like, they were talking about how student debt is so high, and he's like, in this room, there's probably about 500, $500,000 in student debt. I'm like, at least, are you kidding me? It feels like there's
I
more.
I have $500 million.
And he gave the statistic of, if you declare bankruptcy, student loans is the only debt that always stays with you. You cannot be absolved of it
yeah.
with bankruptcy like you would with other types of debt. And he's just like, this is crazy. And so we're going to take the representation of this dude and this dude, and they're both going to just get back at the thing, and they're going to, you know, I mean, the name to the narrative to the way that it felt like it was going to be played just from the alpha, I thought, okay, you guys have really wrapped this in a package well. But like you said, I'm kind of I can understand that concern, and I'm a little concerned, I guess, because, boy, if you said this was donuts versus kittens, you have nothing to compare this to, and you can go buck wild,
yeah.
and really make it. You know, I mean, you're still using the identical principles, but I guess being I guess I haven't seen a narrative this well done yet, this early. That I wonder if that's what's scaring me about it.
Well, the thing of it is, okay, let's, if we brainstorm for a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to keep the narrative the same.
Okay.
Want to keep the student loan thing, fine.
Yeah.
What you do, because we're already doing a fictionalized version of the board of the
what the Department of Education looks like, right?
Right. So let's say it's inhabited by robots. You know,
yeah.
It's monitored by robotic entities. That way we can dismiss realistic portrayals of actions.
Right.
Realistic animations.
Right.
We can remove... the only person you... I mean, you could animate the one character, your main character, because that's what the hacker can see.
Yeah.
Okay? And he can be great. You can spend your time making one awesome character.
Yeah.
You have robots that are Daleks. You know?
and for all intents and purposes, from what they were describing, the security guards...
That's what they had, like,
either
anyway.
Have guns, or they just have cone of visions, mm-hmm. and the harder ones have bigger or longer cones of vision.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, why not Daleks?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
You could have
Dalek robots running around as, like, this is what the Department of Education looks like, because that's how they meant, you know, they manage their high security with robotic security guards.
Yeah.
Awesome. They have no remorse. They have no anything. They will shoot you immediately.
Yeah. So final words. We
got to go. We got to
move on. But anyway. Final words. Their presentation was so flippin' amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because both Zach and Andrew were up on stage. They bounced off of... It was very well rehearsed, and it didn't feel fake. It felt like it was rehearsed. They knew what they were talking about. Just their presentation alone, with all these concerns that I have, I would have said, if I was a VC and I had money, I'd said, donezo.
Yeah.
Like, this, it was amazing.
Yeah. Well prepared, well done.
Well prepared, well done. So, moving on to Rover Rescue.
Rover Rescue. Okay, so the idea of Rover Rescue was, you're managing a bunch of dogs who have landed on Mars.
Right.
Because Martian dogs dogs go to Mars.
Dogs go to Mars.
And the spaceship crashed. You're trying to rebuild it a la Pikmin. But you have to grab oxygen, you have to grab food, you have to grab parts, and
it plays
assemble.
Like an, and it plays like an RTS.
And my immediate problem with this one is that I don't care how good of a multitasker you are, you can't manage more than two dogs going, even two dogs would be a hassle.
Yeah.
Keeping them where their oxygen is constantly depleting.
And their food.
And their food's constant. Like, basically, everything that you do is a temporary fix.
Right.
For the entire game.
Yeah.
Oh, your dog died. You had emotional impact. No, you're going to be like, damn it, dog. You know, screw you. I hate this. And you immediately create an adverse relationship between you and the creatures you're controlling.
Yeah.
Because the human mind's not fast enough to do that. Even in the demos they were showing, they're only controlling one dog at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I went, that's fine.
Yep.
Okay, I can control one. But in an RTS, and this is a comparison I made when they were doing their demo presentations the first time.
Uh-huh.
Or the third time, or whatever time that was that I saw it. Was that when in an RTS, when you tell someone to go somewhere, you know, they do it without question.
Right.
Even if it's to their death.
Right.
Because you're dependent upon absolute control of your units.
Right.
And they kept, and during their presentation, they talked a little about, well, maybe the dog isn't paying attention. Maybe he decides to go this way or that way. And I'm like, then you've thrown RTS out the window.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing you have to depend on, because you can see what they can't see, so you got to do exactly, you tell them what to do.
They supposedly are relying wholeheartedly on you.
You're the helicopter in the sky.
You have an omniscient view. Well, okay, so now, take it on the other side. And one of the pros suggested this, and I actually really liked this.
Okay.
I think it's Magicka. There's a Magicka and Magicka 2. Or Majesty. It's Majesty. I played it on the iPad, but you can get on almost anything.
Is that the one where you're the prince or something trying to recover your kingdom?
Sure. I don't know the narrative. All I know is it's Age of Empires, but you can't control one person. You can build a house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the control. You can build buildings and you can upgrade buildings like you would in Age of Empires or any RTS. But there's people, and as you build buildings, more people arrive in your city. There's bad guys always attacking. The only way that they will attack is if the person feels directly threatened, or you right-click on the enemy and you give it a bounty. And you say, for 50 gold, whoever kills this guy gets 50 gold. And so the only way that you can manage these people in this pseudo-RTS is, it's like an anti-RTS or something. You have to incentivize them. Otherwise, they will just walk around and do absolutely nothing.
This is an iPad game?
I've played it on iPad. I've played it on touchpads, but I've seen it on Steam. It's really fun. I'll have to get it for you.
You have to show me what it is.
But they've done two versions of it, and I've played levels where it's absolutely just mind-numbing, because they go, oh my gosh, there's a caravan coming in, but careful, you have to go defend it. And I've put like 5,000 or 6,000 gold, which is like all the money you would get for a good 30 minutes of play. And I'm like, protect this, guys. And I keep telling them to protect it. And they go off and they just go dink around in the pool. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Why are you not listening to me? I'm giving you all the money in the world. And what sucks is when you incentivize something and you say, I'll pay $1,000 to that, that disappears. And if no one touches it and my caravan gets destroyed, all that money's lost. Oh. And I'm just like, ah! And it's the complete opposite of an RTS. You have no control.
Right.
And I almost think that that's what this really needs. Like, I think the concept is core. I think the game would be fun.
Mm.
I think the narrative is really campy and cute, and run with it, you know?
Yeah.
And the presentation was just like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Did you just say that pun? But
well, he was driving the Laika. Like, Laika was the first dog in space.
Apparently, yeah.
Russian dog or something like that. And so he kept on pushing on the emotional impact of the emotional relationship between you and these dogs. And
yeah.
I get it. Like, have you ever played Nintendogs?
I'm familiar, but no.
It's actually a fun game. It's not even a game. It's just a toy.
Right.
But you're playing as a dog. You're not even playing as a dog. You own the dog, and so you're going through and you have to feed him. It's basically a Digipet with an animated dog.
With 3D.
But you connect to this stupid dog because you're like, oh, you know, I haven't fed you in a while. Oh, okay, you need to go for a walk. Let's go run with the Frisbee and stuff. And you're walking the dog and all these things. And you do have an emotional connection with it, mostly because all the time you put into it.
Right.
You can do the exact same thing with these dogs, but to, you know, the core of that, of having to manage dogs and have them die really quickly, I think is rough, because you're appealing to a younger crowd with your
right,
with
and
your
they animation. And they meant it. I think one term, I don't know who said it, was like it's a casual RTS. It's not meant for the, you know, people that play RTSs would play it, but it's meant to appeal to anyone that just wants to pick up a game. And
I think it just needs to be examined a little different. Either that or explained a little different. Like, it's not going to appeal to your RTS crowd, but it'll definitely appeal to like an iPad crowd if you
absolutely
do it properly.
It
if
sounds
you
like a casual crowd. Game.
So like I think there's possibilities there. I think it just needed to be packaged a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I could tell. I forget his name every time.
Zeph.
Zeph was a little nervous. I could tell, like, as he was standing.
Yeah, bless
there.
His heart. I mean, that
it's hard. So, it's tough doing it.
And I turned to some of the professors during the presentations or after, and I'll tell you what, when you get 10 minutes to present and then 10 minutes to the industry pros to make you cry like a little baby, right? I mean, that's what it felt like. And I remember thinking that I had taken it pretty well, but I was like, man, that was tough. And then I see those guys up there like, oh my gosh, they're totally falling apart. This is terrible. What's wrong with you people? You know, and I turn to the professor. Oh, I totally had. I turn to the professor. I'm like, were we this bad? He's like, you were worse. These guys are so prepared. I'm like, dang it, I probably was. And so, you know, it definitely.
It's true.
I was talking to the professors today, and I had a presentation last week. Totally got chewed up, mm-hmm. right? Eaten alive by the people I was presenting to. And they're like, go redo it and come back next week. And I came back today and I gave them a presentation again. And I'm just like, this doesn't even feel like I did anything different. I just feel like I'm giving you the exact same stuff in different slides. And they go, this is perfect. I love it. I'm like, what is wrong? I hate presenting. Well, I love getting in front of people. I now officially hate presenting. You know,
presentations are tough.
Oh, they like, are. They're,
and no matter how many times you've done it, you could be the best presenter in the world. You come up and sometimes there are the best presenters in the world. You have people like the President of the United States gets up and he messes up presentations sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this is a guy who literally does this for a living in front of billions of people.
Yeah.
And he still screws it up. Like, I mean, because you just, it's just, there's something about you get nervous, you get it in your head, other people's opinion, sometimes something you thought you explained perfectly well didn't quite hit right.
Or in the words of George Bush, there are known knowns and known unknowns and unknown knowns and unknown unknowns.
Unknown unknowns.
Which is absolutely the most asinine thing to say, but it's totally true. I mean, when you're in a presentation, you have no idea what's going to happen. Someone could start heckling you, and it's like, well, I don't know how to respond to this, you know?
It's part of the energy of being in a stage play.
Yeah.
Versus being on a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally agree. I've never been in a stage play, but I can understand
the energy of live performance is just there's an unpredictability to it that you just don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway,
and I'll say, you know, Zeph may have not been the strongest presenter, but boy, he had some sincerity with his pitch.
That was
and,
good.
And that was and
there was a heart to it.
There was very much and regardless of how well versed or how prepared or nervous or not nervous. I wonder if that was one of the advantages of letting everyone be this intent on their games, mm-hmm. because they showed that sincerity, which is really good.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it really shined through. So
yeah, so next one, ludology.
Ludology.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, now
so what they don't have in art in this cohort, they make up in designers. I mean, these designers are freaking amazing.
So ludology, for those who don't know what the term means. Ludology and narratology are two different studies of game design and game development.
Right.
Ludology is the idea that gameplay is what the game is all about. Hardcore ludologists focus on things like Tetris, focus on puzzle games that don't have narrative really, mm-hmm. but are fun to play. Tic-tac-toe has no narrative.
Yeah.
Tetris has no narrative. So because of that, the narrative of that game is not important.
Yeah.
Of any game is not as important as the gameplay of it.
But it also, you know, narratology kind of gets bundled in with film, and they go, oh, well, that should be evaluated as if it was a film. And
right.
It's like, no, because I was the director as I was playing the main character. Thus, it sits in its own realm, but people try to add it to the narratology.
Well,
I think that's significant.
Well, narratology is the exact opposite of ludology, whereas it, like the experience and the story that I had with this game is more important than the actual gameplay is.
Right.
People, and you have apologists for both sides. As far as like something like Tetris goes, like Tetris is a ludology focused game.
Sure.
Whereas something like an RPG is almost nothing without the narrative. The narrative of a Final Fantasy game trumps a lot of the nitpicks if the story is good.
Right.
You know, the game might not be as much fun. I have to grind to do this thing, but man, it's an awesome story. I love experiencing that story.
Can you believe so-and-so did this to so-and-so?
Yeah, and you have the characters of the game. And there's a balance between both. Like, there's people on both sides of that fence. You have someone like David Cage, who is very much about narratology. You have someone who, you know, and I can't think of a good example of a ludology.
Molyneux
is very... Molyneux is more of a self... narrative kind of guy.
Yeah,
he likes to create experience. Have the player create their own experience.
Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know
anyone that's like strictly ludological.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, the best ludologists are people like professional players of games.
Oh, okay.
Someone like in Street Fighter. Fighting game tournament players, people who play League of Legends professionally,
yeah.
They're more concerned with the gameplay of it and how that is affecting their style of play versus any of the narrative. Like, in League of Legends,
they could care less about the lore and what their name of their character
is. I'm playing this really stupid-looking character. Why? Because this tactic is going to work.
Yeah.
Not because I like the character, even. You know, maybe I do, maybe I don't. If that's not as important as what they can bring to the table here.
Right.
And that's the ludology, so.
Yeah. So, okay, what were we talking about? Ludology.
Well, that's
game ludology.
I wanted to explain what ludology was.
Yeah, and well, so, that was a good explanation.
So, ludology, this game, I hasten that they need to change that name.
Don't like it?
I like the idea of it. I think you maybe give it a tagline, give it a something to just define it a little stronger.
Well, being that my thesis game has changed its name like 18 times.
I think it's supposed to change.
I'm not super concerned.
I'm not concerned, but that's my own opinion. I was just like, it just needs to be called something else. But the idea is that you are what was the name of the character? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't... Pester? Pete?
I forget. You're a character.
You're a forgotten character from a game designer's...
From the best game ever designed.
Yes.
But
your designer's fragmented.
And he's forgotten. He's forgotten all the pieces of his game.
Yeah.
And your goal is to go through a level that was, you know, it's been built. And when you get to the end of the level, each time you get to add something else to... the game level.
Mm-hmm.
You get to add art. You get to add
They were focusing
obstacles.
On 7 or 8 formal elements.
Yeah.
And so there was art, there was story, there was objective, there was...
Fail state.
What was the enemy? It wasn't obstacles.
Obstacles.
They called it obstacles.
They kept on adding all the different things, and the idea is that you could add these elements on top of one another
mm-hmm.
to eventually get to the very end, and you see how all these elements fit together.
Yeah.
How the game plays without a fail state, and suddenly it has a fail state. Oh, I can die now.
Yeah,
you know,
that means to the game.
Yeah,
and oh my gosh, this like they talked about like who they were trying to make this for, and I want to talk about that in general with all of them later, but they were like, this could be a game for game design schools because game design schools are really hot right now, mm-hmm. and this could be a game that everyone would play. And it would teach you the formal elements of game and how to understand the ludology of a game.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, that is so sexy. It's such a cool notion, but at the same time, it's going to appeal to a lot of people. It's not just going to be like, oh, this is a education resource. This is going to be something that can easily Anaanthropy. Her dystopia game, where it's a game that gives you an experience to help you understand what it's like to be transgender and go through transgender surgery.
Yeah, I think Josh had that one.
You know, I mean, there's people that are closely related to transgender issues, LGBT, that would go, oh my gosh, I love this. This is so, in a way, validating. That's not meant to be as a bad term, but it's also really great in outside of its market, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that anyone can experience and go, if they're, as long as they're open to it, they go, wow, I never would have thought of that side before.
Yeah.
And I think that this ludology would do it. Like, it would be the perfect tool for this specific market, but anyone that's open enough to spend the time to play it would go, oh, I never looked at a game like that. That is so crazy. You know, and people that don't care, they're just like, whatever, I just want to shoot. I just want to snipe people in camp, Ashley. But
she's not here.
She's not
here.
Can't
defend herself.
Yeah. But she, you know, even those people would go, ah, I never looked at games this way. And just providing a little bit more or a different perspective to the community, whatever that community is, would be beneficial.
Well, I
that's exciting.
I think that's right.
Really exciting.
I mean, I've had conversations with people a number of times, especially gamers are a notoriously fickle crowd.
Yes.
They love to complain about things. When something isn't exactly right, they love to complain about how it's terrible and it's not great and whatever and stuff like that. And especially one of the biggest things that I've learned, even just the past year or so, is looking at a game, it's like, I don't like that game, but I can tell you why I don't like it, mm-hmm. why it doesn't fit me. Not that it's not, not that it's not a good game, but it's just not me.
Yeah.
Like World of Warcraft, it's, great game for people who enjoy that, it's not me.
I can see the appeal.
But,
I can understand ludologically or technically what formal elements make it so appealing.
Yeah.
But
the problem that I've come across is, like, having learned a lot of these kind of things and being able to analyze a game and look at it and take it apart, is that when I talk to people who are just gamers, mm-hmm. goes, well, why don't you just add this level and you can just change this? Why don't you just do this?
Yeah.
And I go, well, in my development head goes, well, that would probably take about 6 months of time.
Yeah, and a couple million.
A couple million dollars. You're dealing with, you need about 14 artists to handle that one thing. You need this many hours. I do the whole analyzation in my head.
Yeah.
And I go, and I try to simplify that explanation on the comment section of whatever I happen to be reading.
Right.
Where I'm like, this is why you can't do that. Because of this. You're looking at, you're looking at this one thing that you just have to do, mm-hmm. and there are so many pieces to put in place just to get that one little simple thing that you just thought of off the top of your head.
Yeah.
And that's why...
And who's to say the designer didn't think of it and go, it's not worth it.
It's not worth the time, sorry.
Right.
And so, I think it's great having a resource like this kind of a game that says, you know what? This is why. This is how these things work together.
Yeah.
Well, you may look at a game and go, why don't you just do it? Well, this is why. Because you have 15 different steps involved.
Yeah.
We have to test. Because, basically what you're doing with this game, which I find interesting, is you're having them play test it over and over and over and over again.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. You're basically...
I never thought of that. That sounds grueling.
You've basically hired the player to QA your game... times.
Isn't that what Notch did? Curse you, Minecraft!
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the game is.
Yeah, that's actually really funny.
Test this in a white box. Okay, test this with art. Test this with enemies now. Okay,
yeah,
now test this.
See what happens when you have the princess.
You've done the same level 9 times, and you've died umpteen hundred times in order to have a final polished game, which is interesting.
Well, the main character looks like Sackboy. Scaling Planets is the studio that mm-hmm. this designer works for. There's very much riffing off of Little Big Planet and to their success. I mean, that they recognize that success.
Yeah. Media Molecule rocks.
Oh my gosh.
So I think
if
you're gonna emulate somebody,
why not, right?
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting kind of feel that. I think they have plans, and one of the things I got to rip Jake. Jake did the presentation. I love this guy. We got to bring him on too. But he said, if you give me one more producer, I can get this, this, and this implemented. And I felt like it was a Kickstarter, and I'm like, I don't know if that was good or bad. It's just
They were told to do something like that.
Yeah,
after the specific things behind, and I think. I don't know. Me personally, I don't think it worked for them.
I don't think so either.
But I can see what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a game breaker.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I didn't like that perspective though, and I think I don't know. Like if I was in a AAA studio and I'm vying for resources, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? But indie game studio, it had a different feel.
Because each of these games, and that's the way that we talked about this earlier, it's been a very survivalist kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
If they can give their best pitch and go, this is what we can do with a little bit extra
Give me two resources. More artists and I can do this. Give me three more engineers and we can...
And give me a chance and let me show you what I can do is really what the whole sales pitch of the night was.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that's valid. I think you're okay.
Yeah. I mean, it rubbed me wrong, and I don't know if that's a bad thing or not. It's just me personally, I thought, oh, this feels like a Kickstarter, because it's like, if we hit our goal, and then if we get our over goal, then we can add this feature. And I'm like,
We're definitely going to have Jake on here so he can bash you back.
Yeah, I know. I got to ask him about that. And I need to talk to Amy about this, because Amy, I guess, I talked to the professors, and I guess Amy, we'll kind of cut before we talk to Vinyl. Or about Vinyl real quick, but Amy, producer for 5 years at EA, mm-hmm. she's very much of the AAA minded, how things yes. are going. And she motivated all of them to, or encouraged them, I should say, to put a lot of, this is our demographic, this is our market, this right. is who we're marketing to. This is so not only do we know what our game is about design-wise, but here's our appeal and who we're going to appeal to. And I thought, yeah, but I was hesitant because not so much that they shouldn't have done it, it's just all the industry pros picked up on it and they called them every single team on the carpet and they're like, that's bull crap. That is not who your market is, or that market's an illusion, or and it really is. We're not marketers. We're not businessmen.
But the thing is, you have to realize that we're doing that right now with our games.
We are.
We're analyzing those same pieces and going, this is who this is for. And this is a year after almost a year of development.
Yeah.
Where we've been taking our time and going, we designed with a certain kind of mindset in mind, mm-hmm. but every software development, when I used to study what you call interface design
okay.
back in my undergrad, and part of that was talking about, you know, you have certain, this is the user, these are your three users of this product.
Yeah.
And we were talking about software development,
uh-huh.
and which is, this is software development.
Sure.
I mean, we're making games, but it's still just software that runs on a computer. So these are your three users. Does your game satisfy these three users?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having those users in mind. And sometimes when you're playing, you know, like even Call of Duty has a certain number of users.
Sure.
You go, this is the person that likes to do this. This is the person that likes to do this. This is the casual player. This is the hardcore player. This is the one who's almost pro. This is the one who's never touched it before.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how do I hit all these markets at the same time? And Call of Duty is really good about that kind of thing. League of Legends is the same deal. You know, every game you need your target. And so, like, even though their targets in these presentations may not have been completely correct, they're still in pre-alpha.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're thinking about that,
I guess it's good that they're thinking about it. I suppose what was frustrating is the professionals picked up on it and they got distracted and they didn't spend time discussing the design with them or discussing. They're like
sure.
they were so distracted that I felt like the time was wasted, that we could have either discussed better design, better scale.
I think that's going to happen regardless.
Do you think? Okay.
Well, because we talked about this before, but, you know, maybe not on the podcast, but you can tell a bunch of developers, is like, I just need you to look at this. It's not, don't look at the art. It's all stand-in art.
Yeah, the
everything
white box dilemma.
Everything is white box. It's completely art. And then every single one of them will say, well, I just don't like this fat guy is sitting there. It's like, it's a stand-in. It's not,
yeah.
it's this
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
the
yeah,
art.
Yeah.
I want you to look at the gameplay. And, like, people will be distracted by whatever they want to be distracted by.
Yeah.
They allow themselves to be distracted by something. You can have no control over that. If
yeah.
it wasn't them talking about their ideal users, it would have been talking about the art. Or it had been
okay.
talking about,
That's fair. That's fair. Because there was multiple times where I was just like, I have questions on that market, and all of a sudden one of the pros brought up that question.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, that's not a market, or that's too broad. You can't just say for everyone, you know.
You also
or whatever.
Had a dozen different people, and
yeah.
like they all wanted to say something a little different.
They did.
So basically, you know, you're going to come up with, oh, they haven't talked about this yet. Let me talk about that. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Whatever. So that's just whatever. Let's talk
yeah.
about the last game.
All right, Vinyl. Okay, this one, out of all of them, was the most well-scoped,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. It was so simple, and it's, you're a needle on a record.
Yes.
And you are playing a four-scroller. It's like GarageBand meets Temple Run. Is that how you what you thought?
Yeah, I think so. I think, or Rock Band, you mean, not Garage Band.
Oh, sorry, not yeah, Rock Band or what's the other Guitar Hero?
Yeah, Guitar
yeah.
Hero. Yeah, I like this idea. I'm disappointed that they still haven't pitched it. Like, they didn't lead with the Android.
You mean mobile device?
So,
it's got to be on.
Yeah,
a mobile
it's got to be. This will be a mobile experience, and that's it.
But you only want it mobile.
Well, here's my thought. Okay, where do you listen to your music more often than not?
Now, more than ever, mobile.
Right. You're going somewhere. You're either listening to it in the car or on a bus or in a train or something like that. Like, how often do you sit down listening to music on your computer? Maybe when you're working on something.
I do, but I'm not focusing on the music.
Right.
It's in the
background.
It's a background noise.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
something. I'm cleaning the house, or I'm, you know, I'm doing homework, or I'm doing something, and music is playing around me, not it's not the focus. But that's, I mean, maybe I'm just missing out on this huge music market that sits down in front of their computers. You know,
well,
but
I thought they were hinting at mobile devices.
Well, that's the problem. That's
they
the
were
only
hinting at it. You wanted them to just say this is a mobile device.
Okay,
game.
When as soon as I saw this game, and as soon as I played it, and they go, it adapts to your music library. It's like this is a mobile game.
Yeah.
That I can listen to and play at the same time on the train.
Yeah.
Or on a bus. Yeah. Or wherever I'm going.
And they need to embrace that wholeheartedly.
I think you go whole hog into that. But that's a personal opinion. That's a karate's endorsement of that idea.
All right. So I figured out the moment that makes this game just absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
Because the idea is you play a game, you're in the rivet or in the trough.
The groove
of a record. And as you're traveling, there's bits of dust that you have to dodge in the needle, and you can go faster and slower, and you can actually scratch the record and reverse. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, man, when I get to play Beastie Boys on this, and I'm like, wah, oh my goodness, I can't. I've never been able to do that, but I wish I could spin records. Like, I mean, just that era of record spinning was freaking awesome in the 90s. And so it's got some really solid mechanics. It's super simple. It can totally be iterated on, and it'll just get prettier and prettier and prettier.
Yeah.
And like you said, it works through your library. So they showed me the back end software, the code is absolutely brilliant on how it analyzes the song before it plays it, and so it knows what to give you in terms of obstacles,
mm-hmm.
and so it actually is adapting to your song, and the gameplay is going to be unique to every song.
Well, it runs off of MIDI, doesn't it?
No. It's taking MP3 file and it is analyzing certain. And so when it reaches certain peaks and valleys and rises and stuff, it knows to give you X obstacles or this type of land. It's brilliant code.
Cool.
Oh my goodness! Sorry,
somebody left their phone on.
I left my phone on. Sorry. But the moment is you get high scores, mm-hmm. okay? It's vinyl. It's all about record. Mm-hmm. This is totally the hipsterest app of all hipsterville. It totally is.
We need to get Adam and Trent here to talk about hipsters.
I know, right? Adam would totally agree with me. Trust me. Because this is the moment. This is what's going to happen. That's all the setup. I just got a high score on a song you've never heard about because it's so underground. Like, it's the total campiest hipster phrase. It's so underground, you've never heard about it, but I've got a high score on it. And you're like, what? What is this app? What are you talking about? Wait, I want to, you know.
You don't even know what this app is?
You don't even know what this app is?
It's just not mainstream. Neither is my music, but let me show off my library.
But here's what happens. The song is shared, and you go, oh my gosh, I want to play that song. Download to iTunes, you get a cut of the iTunes purchase or the Google Play purchase.
Oh, well, that's...
And like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, the business model would be absolutely brilliant. It's totally free to play. Yeah. And you're just getting cuts because you're sharing music and virally getting, you know, it's the worst thing that indie hipster bands want is people to notice them. But it would be so amazing. That moment right there, I can say that.
I'm surprised they didn't run with the Razor. This is... What is that new music app?
Oh, the G Mule's piano? The Magic Piano?
No. Not that. I like that one too, but that's something
pretty cool.
Else. No, I'm talking about online. It's not Pandora.
Oh, Spotify.
Spotify. So this is Spotify meets Rock Band.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, that's exactly what it is mobile phone.
Yeah.
And you go.
Partner with Spotify.
Okay. Oh, do you have this high score? Oh, your friend just got a high score in this. They were playing this song.
Yeah.
Oh, have you never heard of this song? Maybe I should try that song.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, and they should totally embrace the hipsterness. I mean, it's called vinyl.
Well, yeah.
And they just go, oh, but you know, he just got a high score on this, but you've never heard of that song before.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the Facebook post, right? And it's just like so just embracing
it's just,
that
it's,
hipster notion.
It's a
notion.
Simple game that you know, it's not super complicated.
Right.
And the reason I saw the mobile is like you could totally just do a tilt move back and forth to do your... slides, or you can do it by touch if you want.
Slides.
It's super simple. The controls are simple. You're listening to your music. You're enjoying it. You're engaging with your music in a way that's new and different.
Right.
At the same time, you have the possibility for social interaction with other individuals
mm-hmm.
about something that you're already doing.
Yeah.
But now you're playing a game with music lovers who generally, you know, there's a lot of crossover between people. You know, everyone loves music.
Yeah.
Different kinds. And then you know, people like games. Well, you have a crossover there. Because that's what, I mean, Rock Band was fun. The reason why Rock Band worked, or Guitar Hero worked in the first place, but Rock Band even more, was that you could play with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Even if your friends weren't good gamers, people knew the songs.
Yeah.
You know, and if you couldn't, I didn't have the dexterity. I could never play the guitar, for example. I can't play the guitar.
I can't play any of them. I'm a really good roadie. I'm a good backstage roadie. That's all I can do.
I can do drums okay, and I can sing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do the keyboard, and I couldn't do any of the guitars or bass. I'm terrible at it.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, your friends, there was always something for you to do with your friends.
Right.
Even if you're just doing karaoke with your buds playing plastic instruments, there was an experience you're having together.
Sure.
And this hits that same market.
Well, even Spotify, at first I got irritated by it, but every time Spotify says, your buddies were just listening to this song and this song, and I'm like, huh, I've never heard of that guy. I'm going to go listen to it. Is it any good? I listened to it for a couple of minutes. I'm like, okay, that guy has no good taste in music.
Yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden, all you're doing is you're creating the Spotify experience that I just described with a high score, and you're like, high score?
Yeah.
What? How did you get a high score on a game, on a song?
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. You know? I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
You get some people listening.
If it's a free app. It's because try that with Rock Band a little bit, but I mean, there's a huge barrier to entry when you're playing Rock Band. You know, almost everyone has a phone.
Right.
You know. So,
and everyone listens to music.
It's like, oh, I could download the app. It's like, oh, you know, it's free. Oh, okay, why not? I'll give it a shot. Wow, this is fun. Or if it's done, whatever.
So we got to wrap this up.
We're gonna end with
that one was the most scoped and mm-hmm. just so doable and such a great academic exploration of iteration. Yeah. Right.
Good job, Shirley.
Yeah. Good job, Shirley. Good job, yeah, Brian and Michael.
I'm totally kidding.
That team, Jason and Jason. Yeah. It's Brian, Michael, Jason, and Jason, and yeah, Shirley.
And
I love Shirley. I would
give Mike a hard time.
So Brian would kill me if I didn't say that their kind of razor, their thesis was providing a synesthetic experience. Mm-hmm. You know, mixing that visual and that audio, because what you're doing visually is going to actually either scratch the record or slow you down or speed you up.
Yeah.
And so you're going to constantly want to pay attention visually so that your audio experience is proper, right? And that's their thesis. And at first I thought, well, their thesis isn't really that strong, but the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, it's so simple, it's stupid not to do. You know, I mean,
it's just a great idea.
It's stupid not to do. The thesis isn't deep.
No.
But you can spend so much time in it that you'll find the depth, right?
Well, because it's so simple, you have the ability to polish it well.
Oh, man.
And you can make really wonderful experience and make sure, because if your tech already works, you have a year to polish it up and make it gorgeous.
Yeah. And make that tech just shine, yeah, too, right?
And you have some just an amazing thing that you can work with. And so, I mean, as far as their presentation went, I think they could have cut a lot of stuff out of the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you just needed to show that gameplay, and they did. They did add the gameplay videos, but I think you just show that first. This is the song. This is the song again. Let me explain to you what this is. The end. Because that's all you needed, and you had everything.
So this was one thing, and honestly, I could probably say this for every single one of them. There was certain games that I've seen pitched, and I've pitched, where I have to explain it, and I have to give it so much context that I can't just go, let me show you the game. And that's a bad thing. Like, that means I don't think I did a good enough job developing the game.
Sure.
Where the most successful ones, you know, Sterling had either one or two games where he's like, here's our game, it's this meets this. I can't say any more without ruining it. Let me just show you the game.
Well, that's what I did.
Oh, that's right, you did that.
Yeah.
You totally did that.
Well, that's what I wanted. I was like, okay, I could spend the time explaining this. I was like, look, our game is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You need to play it.
Yeah.
Go.
And that's all I did. And that, what was cool with that one, because it was a 5-touchscreen experience,
yeah,
you were just like, get up there, and you had them playing it, and they, within seconds, you totally had them working, and they, you know, and some of them were a little confused, but every single person was active.
Yes. And I'm like, let me explain to you what's happening, what everything means as you're playing this game. And it was an interactive experience as opposed to a passive one.
Right.
And I think that's the most important in any presentation, is to get them involved early.
Right.
Because, like, the best presentations I've ever had are the ones where people are involved.
Sure.
You know, our Zodiac presentation last year, I had the audience members up and helping me out with things.
Oh, that was
funny. Here, I need you to pose like this. Show me what this looks like.
Yeah.
This is the same response we got here. Well, we got a little different response. This is what we got here. And mm-hmm. so I tried to make it an interactive experience. Those have always been the best ones I've had. Because people, you got to realize, most game developers were gamers first.
Sure.
Not all, but most. Okay? Because of that, we like interactivity. Mm-hmm. We don't like, you know, we don't think of games as movies. We think of games as games. And right. we want to play. We want to experience. And that's one of the things with developers, and I noticed this even as we were talking with these developers, was that they want to, you know, even if they didn't have a lot to say, they want to say something. Because you are compulsed, you know, you're compelled to interact.
I think there's something that happens where it's your baby and you just want it to keep talking about it. Where yeah. you need to let it just sing for yourself. And
well, it's the same problem that we were talking about Sucker Punch.
Oh right. yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, just shut up and show me the.
But have you looked at the trailer game. Since?
No.
Okay. The actual trailer is not bad.
Oh really?
It's a great trailer, and like to be honest, it sells it way better than he ever could.
Okay. Everyone is just distracted by, like, superheroes.
Well, that was the problem. Is that the way that you sold it? You know, you had this problem, and the thing, the basic premise of the game is basically that there's a group that has really been hammering on superheroes.
Uh-huh.
Has been putting them in cages and locking them away. Think X-Men.
Or heroes, okay. or every or, other.
Yeah, or, yeah, and that's fine. But yeah. basically, you're playing the game that you're playing is in that environment where you are against the government
yeah.
who is trying to stop you. And that's fine. As a narrative, that's great. And the game trailer plays it great. The only problem is the expectations that were created by the presentation did not fit the trailer that he was trying to get to.
Yeah.
And so it was a bad presentation, but a good trailer.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with these presentations. If you do a bad presentation, but you have a good game, then just. Scrap
yeah.
your talking.
Well, you know,
and just do it.
I don't think any of the presentations were necessarily bad.
No, I don't think so. I haven't been.
But I will tell you, every single one of them, I knew what the game was, and I was so excited for it. I'm like, just get to the game. Just shut up. Stop talking. I just show them.
Well,
just show
well, part
us the
of
game.
It you already knew. You know.
Well, but at the same time, if I want to think I was not alone in that, and it's just like. Our game is this meets this. Let's play it because it's just so freaking awesome. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. The first one, they spent a lot of time talking. It sold it. You know, they gave the same message that the game did. Mm-hmm. But I think they could have said, "We saw this video. Check this out. Check out this 1 minute video. Pretty cool video from a movie. We wanted to encapsulate that in a game. Let me show you how. Boom, gameplay. Right?
I think that would have been stronger.
I would have loved to see that because. And this is definitely personally for me too that I need to you know I'm not you know above this critique mm-hmm. which is I need to stop wasting so much time and get to the cool part and let it sell for itself. There's definitely a confidence issue. It's like I don't know if it's good enough.
Well,
right? And that's a hard one.
I think it was Shakespeare who said brevity is wit.
Yeah.
You know, and like we're guilty of this even on this podcast.
Says the guys says that we're an hour and a half into this.
Oh, we're not that. We're only an hour 10. But I think we're wrapping it up. But
yeah.
the idea is that, like, especially in a presentation, just don't waste my time. You know, people
yeah.
are very...
Well, sure.
And everyone in the world is hypersensitive to when you're wasting their time.
Yeah.
And they understand it. People love, just get to the meat. You know, I can eat the bread later. Mm-hmm. You know, if I go to a restaurant and there's a steak and a roll handed to me at the same time, I'm way more interested in the steak than I am in the roll. You know, it's like, okay, here's a steak, here's the little roll
yeah,
on the side.
Yeah. No, you know, I get what you're saying.
I don't need to explain the roll first.
I'm trying to think of some funny joke about how I always find myself eating salad first, but...
Well, you do because the steak's not ready.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
All right. Well, good convos.
And just as a final reminder to you, to the students that are listening, or to anybody who's listening, really, GDC is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Oh my gosh, we got to totally talk about that either next week or.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to get on this.
We want to talk about this before spring break comes up. But GDC is coming. If you don't have your tickets, you better really. First, examine your head and wonder why you didn't do it.
And you totally missed the early.
You missed the early bird by like a month. But you know, if there's tickets still available, I think some of the higher end passes are still available. I think some of the summit ones are still available, but I think summits are running out.
Yeah,
so
which are amazing. Okay. Before you're going to get too long witted on this because I'm going to start talking about it too.
Anyway,
we're going to do a podcast just about GDC and like the tips and tricks that we learned. We're not pros or anything, but you know, we did it with Press Start. Let's do it with
sure.
the Art Club.
Oh, at Press Start. Oh, I forgot.
Press Start
on the 5th. We have Debbie Graves.
Oh,
from
awesome.
EA. She's the EA recruiter here in Salt Lake. She's going to be talking to us. So this is not related to this, but I also do a Press Start on Mondays at the Union Building.
I do it too.
Spencer also comes sometimes.
Whatever, I try to come.
But yeah, we you know. So if you haven't heard about that, make sure you join our Facebook group, and we'll I'll have some information on our new website, gamedevconfess.com.
And tweet us at gamedevconfess.com. No, at gamedevconfess on Twitter.
Well, I was just talking about the
thing. I know. Well, let me cross promote.
Let me do the cool thing. Spencer, if they really wanted to get a hold of us.
This is getting old bad.
If they really want to get a hold of us, how could they get a hold of us?
On Twitter I can't talk anymore. At gamedevconfess. Facebook.com/gamedevconfess. Email us at gamedevconfess@gmail.com or check out our fancy new website, The Karate Slap Together. That's just questionable beyond belief. At gamedevconfess.com.
Alright.
So, yay for us.
Nailed it.
But cross promote, press start, Salt Lake, the University of Utah.
Game development. Try and get a job club.
Yeah, that's about as eloquent as we are when we have the meetings. But that'll be exciting. GDC's coming up. I want to kind of do like microcast during the whole week, but we'll see how
we'll
that works.
We'll see. Oh gosh, our time gets crushed. We should probably do one like on Friday.
Yeah,
and just
before or after karaoke.
Maybe Thursday.
Before or after karaoke?
I'm not doing two nights of karaoke.
BT Dubs, GDC, karaoke is probably the best.
Oh, we had a great time.
I heard about it. I missed it last year.
Oh, we had such a great time last year, and so we're really excited. We will be having some conversation about GDC afterwards as well. But
we got to do. We'll do the train recaps.
Oh, are you going to be on the train?
Oh, I'm so on the train.
Oh, so maybe we'll do a podcast on the train.
Oh, we're so doing on the train. Okay, we're riding a train to and from. It's like 18 hours to and from.
Yeah, we'll definitely
Utah
have a little bit of time to do some podcasting.
This is going
to
be awesome.
So anyway, let's wrap it up.
Thanks for listening. Have a good day. Enter joke so that we can put our music at the end.
Oh, I didn't have a joke ready.
No joke.
That's okay.